You know how sometimes when you start reading a book, there is a big flowery description around the first, there's a beautiful elaborate design around the first letter. You know, once upon a time, and the once or the O is huge and elegantly decorated, and there's a nice picture of the happily ever after that is supposed to end. At the end of the story is where it is all around that O. And interestingly enough, that's not just the way that storybooks begin, that's actually methodologically the way that we actually learn. Because here we are, we're about to engage in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Shmuel Aleph is one of the most incredible, the most emotionally, on the one hand, taxing and elating Sefer we're going to learn that we've done up till now. It is the most incredible Sefer. But somehow we need to appreciate it by just looking at the first sentence. Because interestingly enough, in Chazal, in the works of Jewish theology, the idea is that you can unpack a concept, a thesis, from the earlier on you are in it. So that's why there's so much weight put on when you're learning the first pasuk in the Torah. Not just the first pasuk, the first word. Then if you want to go back to the first letter, there's so much emphasis put on the beginning, because the closer we go to conception, the greater sense of the character of the general whole we understand. So when we come to this Sefer of Sefer Shmuel, what I'd like to do is try to work with you tonight. Just before we even actually learn the story, we're going to be learning the unbelievable story about Chana, the birth of Shmuel, Chana's song, Chana's two tefillos, as we go through the first story, which is really a remarkable story. But before we get there, we need to understand context. We can't understand the Sefer until we get the context of the Sefer. So what we're going to do is we're going to innocently read the first few psukim, the first one specifically, and try to pry out of that. Maybe there is a theme. Maybe there is something greater going on, just as enunciated in the first pasuk. So here we have it, ladies. On the first page, just a guide to how this short book works. We're going to be covering the first 1.5 parakim of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, which the text for that is found in the first 5 pages, and thereafterwards are in the Mefarshim. So we have a section of the Mefarshim of the text directly. And then we have 2 eons, the first of which we're going to be covering this evening. And then we have a map at the very end. What I try to do is I try to create different fonts for different stages of the Mefarshim. So there's a key on page 5 at the very bottom, the key for the fonts over there. There's Psukim, Chazal, and Mefarshim. So just when we're doing a Mefarsh, it's important to know which section we're doing. Is this a Pasuk? Is this Chazal? Is this the people of the Gemara, the sages of the Gemara and the Mishnah? Or is this Mefarshim, is later day Mefarshim thereafterwards on Tanakh? So just hopefully the fonts is also just a key to remember where we are in stages historically. So to begin at the very beginning, here is our beginning of the book. I apologize, we just ran out. There will be more next week. If it's possible... If it's possible to just share, I do have extras that you aren't put together. I'm so sorry. Thank you. Okay, there we go. Dina came with her Tanakh. We all, by the way, have it by heart. It's just being able to re-recognize that. That's what we're doing. Our lifetime is spent finding it inside. So let's learn this. So here we are. Here's our story. Vayehi. Ish echad min haramasayim. There was one man from the Ramasayim. Ramasayim sounds like a name. Tsofim literally means to watch, watchers, but it is also sounds like a name. The Ramasayim of Tsofim, Mehar Ephraim, from the mountain of Ephraim. V'shmoi, and his name was Elkanah ben Yerocham ben Elihu ben Toichu ben Tsuf Ephrasi. And his name was Elkanah, and we're given his lineage all the way back to Tsuf, from the city, who was an Ephrasi. Ephrasi means, just go and understand this, that means? So, so it means to say he came from the area of Ephrat. And some, as we noticed in Giras Rus, actually, Ephrati also means that he's a person of lineage, he's a person of status, he's a person of gravity. Okay, so here we have our first pasuk. Sounds pretty normal, meaning we're waiting for this full-blown description of, you know, the fireworks and the whole theme, and it sounds pretty pedestrian. So let's go a little further and see if we can get anything else about this. V'loishtei noshim, and then he has 2 wives. Shema chas Chana, v'shema shenis Penina. So he has 2 wives. One's name is Chana, one is Penina. V'ayhi l'fnina yiladim u'lechana en yiladim. So one has children, one does not. V'aloha ish ha'hu mi'iroi mi'yomim yomima. And from year to year, or from time to time, this man would go from his city, Lishtachavois, to prostrate himself, Lizbach Lashem Tzavakos B'Shiloh, to sacrifice in Shiloh. V'shem Shnei Eli, Chofni U'Pinchas Kohanim Lashem. And the name of the two children of Eli, who was the high priest at the time, were Chofni and Pinchas. Okay, so we're told a story. We know a little bit about where he comes from. We know a little bit about his private life. We know about his family structure. We know a little bit about his activities. That's what we've been told in the first three psukim. Does this tell us anything emblematic about Sefer Shmuel as a whole? That's the question. Is this in any way bigger than simply the story of a person who we find in the mountains of Ephraim? That's our work for tonight. Does anybody want extra for Lynn, just to share, if that's all right? Okay. No. Okay, I just wanted to make sure everybody's got. Okay. Awesome, Mr. Kinnan. Yes.
I have a question, though. I know, so when I think of the Bible, it means something is bad.
Right, there is such a rule. That Vayehi usually introduces a negative time, and the question is going to have to be, is this introducing a negative time, is this closing a negative time? That's exactly our question. We have to try that rule out, meaning we have to feel that rule and see how that rule applies itself. Nonetheless, here is our opportunity to try to understand that. So, our story starts well away, many, many books away from Sefer Shmuel. It starts in a Midrash, in a Midrash Agada in Sefer Bereishis. So if I could draw your attention for a moment, what we're going to do is we're going to move to page 7. And here we're going to do our first Iyun, which is going to take us to an Agada in Bereishis. And the Agada in Bereishis is towards the end of Sefer Bereishis, and it's talking about Nevi'im, prophets in general. And here is the description of prophets that the Agada tells us. Vayhi ish echad mi Ramosayim. There was a man from Ramosayim, that was our Pasuk. Kesha HaKadosh Baruch Hu ro'e l'dor sheyirsha. When God looks down, the Almighty looks down at a generation who sins. V'hu choyzer u'mevakesh afilu tzadik echad sheyisle b'shviloi. He looks around and he searches out maybe one righteous person that could have perhaps sustain that generation. Sounds similar to? Right, sounds similar to the negotiations that Avraham Avinu was making on behalf of Sodom. Meaning, you have a decrepit society over here. So maybe Hashem, please, can you look into maybe just find someone, some people who might make it worthy enough. We find similarly at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, there were many evil people. Hashem was searching for even one person who could take this on. Shenemar shotatu b'chutzos Yerushalayim. The pasuk in Jeremiah says that Hashem was looking around in the courtyards of Yerushalayim, im timtzu ish, if one person could be found. Meaning you just need to have one person who has the shoulders, who has the capacity, who has the spiritual capacity to be able to sustain that generation, to be able to maybe deflect the encroaching wrath. Sha'atzadik ma'amid es ha'olam al yesodah. The Midrash says because a righteous person establishes the world on its foundation. Any guesses at this point in time what this has got to do with Sefer Shmuel? What in this first pasuk is this Midrash commenting on over here? So we notice that the first pasuk is talking about an ish echad, a one person. So you see, the Midrash is saying that there was a search for one person. Let's contextualize, says the Midrash. Kevon shechatu b'mei micha, we know. Let's reverse for a moment. The end of Shoftim ends like this. There is the story of Shimshon. Then there's the story of Pesel Micha, which is this personal shrine which is taken into the house of Micha. We have this Ish Levi, who is his priest. And this becomes a national shrine for the Shevet Dan. And then we finish with the story of Pelegish Begiva, rape, murder, civil war, decimation. That was the end of Shoftim. Very, very terrible ending to Sefer Shoftim. So says the Midrash, Kemo Shechotu b'memicha, hoyu makatru natsalmo shemicha, voyo ashan shel shilo oile min azvachim shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, look, they sinned at the time, they built this shrine to Micha, and the smoke of this shrine would ascend to heaven. And it would be mixed with the smoke of the Mishkan, of the Korbanos of Mishkan. They were mixed together. Ge'olim ba'aru mimenu. The pasuk in Tehillim talks about how the smoke of anger ascends to Hashem. You have the smoke of the Mishkan, you have the smoke of Pesel Micha, both ascending to Hashem in this mixed form, and there's this tremendous sense of anger from Hashem. Kivyachol choyze mevakesh afilu tzadik echad. And therefore, kivyachol Hashem is saying, let me find just one person, one worthy person in this generation. So the world should not be overturned. I'm searching and I'm not able to find. The Midrash concludes with our pasuk. The first pasuk in Sefer Shmuel is telling us the story of the conclusion of Sefer Shoftim. Is that fascinating? Meaning, don't read this in a vacuum. Don't open up this book. Realize that this is a continuum. Realize this is one person in the context of the society we all read about, we all learnt about at the end of Sefer Shoftim. That's what the Midrash is telling us, number one. Here is our man, our one man, because there was only one man worthy at this point in time, whether this be a hyperbole or in actual state. This is the state of society. Now that's a lot to put into the pasuk, right? That's a huge amount that we're investing into this pasuk when looking at the words Vayish Echad. It could simply mean, the pasuk could simply mean, Vayish Echad, there was one man as opposed to two people. Where the Midrash is obviously getting this from somewhere. And this is an important point when we learn. When we learn a Chazal, when we learn a Midrash, we need to appreciate where they're coming from. Where do they derive it from? There's a tradition in here. But this tradition is not simply found in the words Vayish Echad. It is more than that. It overflows. Let's try to find the place where that comes from. Where's the source of the spring that's flowing forth that we're watching in this Midrash? So, who wrote the book of Shmuel? We're going to Shmuel Kosov Sifroi, says the Gemara Basra. So certainly the first part of Shmuel is written by Shmuel himself, which is part of this. I don't think that he is, I can see that Dean is going in the direction of saying that Shmuel is substantiating his own lineage. I don't think that that's what's going on over here. This is the, over here.
I'm just saying that if he wrote the book, then we have to take it into account.
Yes, no question. We do. We're going to have to take into account the fact that he wrote both Shoftim and Shmuel together. And that's how we need, and therefore we have to see it as the work of one person who's trying to make a very particular and salient argument. So let's take it further. Let's jump into the actual nitty-gritty. Notice that the Psukim themselves actually tell the same story. The Psukim themselves tell the same story because, remember, the Shoftim is going towards a precipice. Shoftim is going downhill, accelerating to a point of no return. And the stories which precipitate that fall are the stories of, let's just recap for a second, where does it start going really bad? So before Pesel Micha is already, we start seeing a leader who's not even as much of a leader as we really recognize him, and that is Shimshon. And then we see the story of Pesel Micha and the story of Pelegesh Bigev. Those are the three last stories which really are in a downhill hurtle. So now, what was that? Not sure. Tzofim usually, as the Mefarshim understand it over here, is that there were two Ramas, and this was a Ramat Tzofim. They watched one another. There were two hills, and they were overlooking each other. That's the way it's generally understood. Let's take this a little further, just to get a little bit of ground. We go into the end of Sefer Shoftim, and those three stories actually begin in a very similar fashion. Turn to page source 12 for a second. This is Perek Yud Gimel in Shoftim. I know we're learning Sefer Shmuel, but we are going back to a little bit of Shoftim for this. Your Gimel Beis, Vayhi Ish Echad, Mitzara Umishpachas, Adani Ushua Manoach. How does the story of Dan begin? The story of Shimshon begin? About there was one person, there was a man. That sounds familiar, there was a man. Then the story, then later on, in the first of his escapades, we're told about how he decides he's going to marry a Philistine woman. We're going to actually come back to that in a moment, the words he uses to describe that. Let's skip for a moment to the source 14, and this is Yud Zayin Aleph. Vayish Mehar Ephraim Ushmo Michayahu. There was a man from Har Ephraim, and his name was Michayahu. This is the beginning of the story of Pesel Micha. Once again, there is this man. He's also from Har Ephraim. The next source, in source 15, Perek Yutes, Vayibayim Bemahem, Umelech Em Yisrael Vayhi Ish Levi Gar b'yarkasei Ephraim, v'yikach lo yisham pilegesh mi'beis lechem Yehuda. It was a man who was a Levite who lived in the yarkasei Ephraim, deep into the mountains of Ephraim, and he married a woman, he took a pilegesh from Bethlehem. Interesting. You notice over here that the stories are all starting the way about there was this person who lived around here. Two of them who actually lived in Har Ephraim. And in fact, if you want to take it one step further, look very carefully, there is actually also another common theme between the last two stories, and that is that the person who was the propagator was actually an Ish Levi. Meaning, in the story Pelegesh Begibah, the man himself was an Ish Levi, right? As we're told in the pasuk there, he was an Ish Levi b'Yarkasei Har Ephraim. And where is the Ish Levi in the Pesach Michal story? He was the priest. So we have this description of this one man who's starting out, and two of the stories are in Har Ephraim. Then we have two of the three stories are actually Ish Levi. What's fascinating to note is that if you go to Divrei Hayamim, you'll see something very interesting. Source 16, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, it says, B'nei Levi, Gershom Kasim Merari. We know that this is the description of all the children of Levi, and then a few psukim later in Pasuk Yud, it says, B'nei Elkanah, Amosai V'Achimos. Wait a second, who's in the list of Leviim? Is Elkanah himself. Meaning, when Sefer Shmuel opens up, we're given a description which sounds like an echo of the previous three stories about an Ish Echad who comes from a similar neighborhood to all the two of the three last stories, who is an Ish Levi. It's almost like Tanakh is telling the same story again. But now there's a turning point. You see, Shmuel stopped the book of Shoftim after those three stories and started this story about the Ve'ish Echad as a fresh Sefer. So the Psukim themselves are in the setup, the introduction to all these following stories, to Shimshon, to Pesal Micha, to Pilegish Begiva, to Elkanah's story with Chana, seem to be in a line. Just they're separated by a book. It's almost like this is the parallel but different. This is where we've reached the bottom and we've turned around, as the psukim seem to be describing. Dina?
Didn't you say that we don't know the time of those stories, at least the two?
Correct. Even if we don't know the time, as you're well pointing out, and the Mefarshim argue, when did those stories occur at the end of Sefer Shoftim? Nonetheless, they were put at the end of Sefer Shoftim for a very purposeful lesson, and that's what we're learning from. And this might be one of the reasons, is to get that sense of contrast. So let's take it further. So meaning to say, the Medrash is already telling us something. The Psukim seem to be reflecting that there is a type of pattern, but we don't know what the pattern is. So let's try to appreciate what is going on over here. Let's attack it from this particular angle. What was the problem at the end of Sefer Shoftim? What was the Tanakh seems to emphasize that there was a common problem. And what was the problem? Tanakh repeats it again and again and again. Right, so the refrain that concluded, I apologize for those who weren't here for Shoftim, but this is just a very brief recap of the refrain which occurs at the end of Sefer Shoftim is a very, very strong phrase, which is, Vayamim Ahem, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, there was no king in Israel, Ish Hayashar Be'nav Yaseh. People did whatever was good in their eyes. You see this time and time again. We see it at the beginning of Perek Yud Zayin, Chof Aleph. We see it many, many times at the end of Sefer Shoftim. In those days, there was no king, and everyone did what they wanted. Now, Yashar literally means like straight. So what means to say? What's it being described to us? Is that the people did whatever they wanted, whatever was in their own logical framework good? That's what they did, and there was no guarding system that was trying to curtail or limit their expression of themselves. In fact, that's when it comes back to Shimshon's finding his first wife. He finds a Philistine wife, and he comes to his parents and he says, "Vayomer Shimshon el aviv, oisah kachli ki hi yashra be'inai. Please, let me marry her because she is yashra be'inai." Now you can imagine the conversations that must have occurred between his parents and himself. Imagine the many conversations where Shimshon's parents would say, you know, Bubala, aren't there any Jewish girls? You can't find anybody? But what's Shimshon's response? Yashra Be'enai. I want to marry her. I met her on campus. We were in the same club. And everything worked out. Right? He Yashra Be'enai. That's the emblem of the time is Yashra Be'enai. Anything that we want goes. That's what seems to be happening. Now, Let's take this further. Happens to be that that's not a random phraseology. That phrase is used elsewhere in the Torah for a very particular issue. Here it is. And this is the key to the whole matter. The place it arrives is in Perek Yud Beis in Dvarim. This is in Source 6. The Pesukim tell us the following. Let's try to think about it from the perspective of Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his last speech. They're standing on the banks of the Jordan. And Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them, imparting in his last speech, all the important things I need to remember. And here is what he says. This is in Source 6 on page 7. Ki im ala makom asher yuchar Hashem Elokeichem mikol shivteichem, lasumes shemo sham leshichnos edrushu uvaso shama. Rather to the place that Hashem, your God, will choose from all of your tribes to place his name there, leshichnos edrushu, you'll search out that place and you'll arrive there. Okay, so you should search out the place where God's abode is, and you'll come there. Va'avesem shama, and you'll bring there olazechem zivchechem es masrosechem es chumas yedchem v'nidrechem v'nidvoisechem v'choros bekarchem etzonachem, and you'll bring there all your sacrifices, your burnt offerings, your zvachim, your tithes, your truma, your specific and general, your general and specific donations, and your b'choros and your cattle and your sheep. V'achaltem sham lifnei Hashem Elokeichem, and you'll eat there in front of God. U'smachtem b'chol mishlach yedchem atem uvateichem asher berecha Hashem Elokeicha. And there you'll eat with all the blessing that God gave you and your family. Lo yisa'asun k'chol asher anachnu asim po hayom. Don't do that which we're all doing today. Ish kol hayashar beinav. Now, fascinating, the Torah says, don't do what is fit in your eyes. Don't just do what we're doing here, which is fit in your eyes. What is Moshe Rabbeinu telling them? Because appreciate how why this is difficult, you see. Because we imagine the Dor Dea, the time of the Midbar, is that's perfection. You know, there are problems. There were earlier on, the Chet HaEgel and the Meraglim. That was early on. We're at the end of the 40 years, yeah? And he says, don't do what we're doing now. Don't do Yash Rabbeinu no more. Rather what? What's going on? Do you know what you're saying? Great, so it's all about context, and what Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be saying is, and the first introductory psukim seem to be saying, is that there is a place for korbanos, meaning, go to the place of God, and that's where you're going to be sacrificing your korbanos. Not like now, what's now? In the Midbar, there was much more leniency when it came to where one could sacrifice. The Gemara in Zvachim talks at great length as to which korbanos and which personal sacrifices or personal meat could be sacrificed wherever. Nonetheless, don't sacrifice wherever you want. Sacrifice, and coming back to the first pasuk of this paragraph, ki im ala makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem. Come to the place of God. Correct, until the establishment of the Mishkan. Now remember, what happens is as they enter into the land of Israel, they have the traveling Mishkan. When they settle down, they make a more permanent structure in Shiloh, and that's the Mishkan, which is, we don't have so many pictures of it. You don't see that there's much more focus on the Beis HaMikdash and the Beis Sheni, more than this Mishkan, but there was a semi-permanent structure of the Mishkan. It wasn't the wooden frame that we had in the desert. There was a more permanent stone and curtain structure, which was in Shiloh for many, many years. Now, interestingly enough, so what the Torah is doing for us over here is defining for us, to a certain degree, the phrase of Ish HaYashar Beinav. Is that interesting? The Torah is telling us Ish HaYashar Beinav is expressed as a will and wish to sacrifice, to come close to God wherever we want. Now, let's take this in context. The Mishkan is our predominant antenna or our place to reach God when it came to the first numerous centuries in living in the land of Israel. In fact, for well over 360, 370 years, in the first period where we were in the land of Israel, after the wars, after Kibush and Yeshuv, there was this Mishkan, which was our place. And it was only way afterwards, where we're going to get to later on in Shmuel, and later on in Melachim, where there was even the notion of building the Beis HaMikdash and actually actualizing the commands which were in the Torah and establishing this bias, a fixed place. Which means to say that we have a very long period of time where the Mishkan is in fact the centerpiece of Israel. Which is interesting. Which sefer covers the longest duration of when the Mishkan was actually there to be this place, this centerpiece in Israel. Which sefer covers the greatest amount of years during that period? It's Shoftim. Because Shoftim, in fact, spans from the time after Yeshua and the Zakenim all the way to Shmuel. And remember, as we're going to get into the later Prokim in 3 and 4 and there afterwards, the Mishkan's going to be destroyed. Right? The Mishkan's about to be destroyed at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, which means that Mishkan territory is really, really, really Sefer Shoftim's business. Which is fascinating because, with one exception, Mishkan Shiloh is not mentioned in the book of Shoftim. The Mishkan Shiloh is not mentioned in the book which covers historically the greatest amount of years during which the Mishkan was around. And now let's reopen the beginning of the book the first pasuk again. The third pasuk over here in Shmuel. What does it tell us? The third pasuk of this book, which covers the very, very tail end of the Mishkan Shiloh, already starts telling us about the fact that he would go up to Mishkan Shiloh. Do you see what's happening over here? It's interesting. The book which covers the territory doesn't mention it except for one exception. When was the one time that Sefer Shoftim does mention Mishkan Shiloh, that there was a Mishkan? It's only one time the whole of Sefer Shoftim mentions that. Tough one.
In the Civil War, we had a reference.
Good. Excellent. So we had a very, very, just before the Civil War, there was a reference to where they brought the Aaron out. Okay, there wasn't a reference to that, and there were veiled references to it. But the time that it mentions it explicitly is a very fascinating time, and that is where it talks about, let me see if I actually put it into this into the packet. I don't believe I did. The time that it mentions it is, it says that the Pesel Micha, the Shroud of Micha, was there all the days there was a Mishkan in Shiloh. Meaning, the only time that Sefer Shoftim gives credence to the fact that there was this Shrine of Hashem, there was this centerpiece, this place where the Torah tells us, the Shechinah Sidur Shuv Vasa Shava, that you should find, seek out, and bring your korbanos to, is only mentioned in the context of the anti-Mishkan. The Shrine which is against it. Isn't it fascinating? It's like the book of Shoftim is undermining the very essence or the very concept of Mishkan itself. And then suddenly Sefer Shmuel, it pops open, and now there's a dearth of discussion about this person who'd come up. Just to appreciate what's going on over here, you just need to understand what's going on to its fullest. You see, what seems to be happening over here is that there's a lot of corruption, both politically, both spiritually, and also socially in the society of Israel, of ancient Israel. But what the Torah seems to be arguing in the refrain, when Tanakh is using the refrain, Isha Yosha Beinav Yaseh, it seems to be telling us that the problem was rooted in the fact that there was no central spiritual place for that generation. You know how you could get to an end of Shoftim as it is? Well, the reason why you get there is because there wasn't a place, there wasn't a sense of identity which was focused around one place where teaching would leave and all of Israel would get that teaching. It just wasn't. It wasn't the focus point of that generation or those generations. And hence, because it wasn't the focal point of those generations, what comes out of that, the byproduct of such a society, is a society of civil war, a society of rape, of murder, of destruction, of infighting. That's what the book is arguing over here. Go back to the roots, which is what is to be found in Devarim, Isha Yashua Ben Avyaseh. And if that's the case, then somehow, let's come back to our Midrash Agada in Bereshis. If the problem of Sefer Shoftim is such, then the only way you can fix it up is a person who's bringing back into life the consciousness of a God-centered society. So who is the Ish Echad? Who is our one person? The one person against all these other individuals from Levi and Har Ephraim? This is Elkanah. Elkanah, Shmuel's not born yet. Elkanah now is the person. Now there's something fascinating over here which is going on. Because Elkanah somehow is trying to right the wrong that was created in society beforehand. So let's go back to the psukim. If we're going to use those psukim in Devarim as our model for understanding this, The problem is Isha Yosha Ben Avyase, doing what you want and serving God where and how you want. So what does the Psukim suggest to us as the way to fix that? So the words is Leshichna Sidrashu Vasa Shama. Find that place. Seek out that place. What does it mean, seek out that place? So let's just focus on this. What does it mean? What does it mean, Leshichna Sidrashu? Rashi in Source 17, the top of page 9, says the following. Leshichna Sidrashu, what does that mean? Ze Mishkan Shiloi. What is the way to get around Isha Yorisha Vein Avyase is to find the Mishkan of Shiloi. And the Ramban takes it one step further. V'tam Leshichna Sidrashu, you should go and travel to it from far lands. And you should go around proclaiming and asking, semi-statement saying, where is the house of God? What's happening is you should ask, and when you go to the different cities, you should make a big noise about the fact that you're seeking God's house. In fact, the Gemara Makos tells us that the signposts in Israel were of a unique nature. That there were lots of signs which indicated where the Arei Miklat were, where the cities of refuge were, because a person looking for an Arei Miklat doesn't have too much time on their hands, Rachmana Litzlan. They have somebody pursuing them potentially, and then that person needs to know very clearly where and immediately they can find refuge. However, the Gemara says, in contrast, there were very few signs where the Beis HaMikdash was. There were very few signs as the direction to Jerusalem. Why? Because of what the Ramban is saying over here. The Pasuk says, Tidrushu, you should search it out. Meaning, when you go to find Jerusalem, it shouldn't just be, you know, you're on your, you know, put into your GPS, you know, one Harabait lane, and you're on your way. What happens is there's an expectation that you should be going, and you should be asking people, because there aren't signposts. And everybody should say, well, where are you going? Leshichna Sidrushu means that it should be a whole journey where it's gathering everybody else around. There's an excitement. Everybody's coming to the place. Now, we're in a position to start reading the Medrash Tana of Eliyahu. The Medrash in Tana of Eliyahu is in Source 10. I took it a little out of order just to appreciate it in sequence. The Medrash says the following in Source 10. Kayotze badavar ato aimer. In a similar way, it is said, "Va'yishech admin Ramosayim, haya Elkana ole arba'im pa'imim arba'a pa'imim v'shana." So Elkana would ascend to Mishiloi 4 times a year. Shlosha min haTorah, 3 times from the Torah. What does that mean? 3 times from the Torah, because that was Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. That was he was obligated to go. Va'achas shekibel alav, and 1 extra time because he wanted to, not because he had to. Shenemar va'ala ishau mi'ira miyamim yamima. Elkana haya ole v'ishto banav v'nosav v'echav achiyosav v'chol krova v'moy. He took the whole caravan. Everybody. He took his wives, his children, his brothers and sisters, everybody, all his relatives came up when he went to Shiloh. V'kol b'nei beisoy haya ma'ala esakol imoy. And he'd bring up everybody with him. Omar. Why did he do that? Because he realized that if you look around in society, when people aren't God conscious, there's no such thing as no belief. There's belief in something or belief in something else. It's a very important thing to remember. There's people who say, I don't believe in this. So you need to ask them, you may not believe in this, but what do you believe in? You believe in something else. There has to be another system that fills that void. So he says, I don't want there to be a void. So therefore he made a big Torah about this. Dovar acher, lama ma'ale esakol. Why did he bring everybody? K'sheyu olim b'derech v'lanim b'rechov ha'shalir, miskabtzim ha'anashim levad v'anashim levad. So there was groups of men and women, shekena ish medaber ha'ma'ish v'ishay ma'isha, and all the men would speak to the men, and all the women would speak to the women. Godol m'godol, katonim katon, v'ha'yesa medina mar geshes, v'ha'yu shalim lohem, le'echan te'aleichu. They would all ask him, what exactly is going on over here in our little quiet village? Suddenly we have an entire explosion of family who are coming through and the tourist industry is booming. Where are you going? And they would say, we're going to the house of God in Shiloi. From there is Torah and there is mitzvahs. Why don't we go together and ascend together? You know, the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks describes in his initial meeting with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he came to New York and he wanted to meet different people, and one of his meetings he had was with Rav Soloveitchik, and one of the meetings he tried to make was with Lubavitcher Rebbe. He wasn't able to get a meeting at the beginning, and he was in California. He got a call. He took a bus across the whole country and to get to the Rebbe. And he was a student at the time I think it was Cambridge at the beginning. And he went to Cambridge to Oxford, I think, or vice versa. And he wanted to ask the Rebbe about various different things. And he said the most unusual thing about the conversation was the Rebbe turned the tables on him and started interviewing him. How many Jews are there on campus? What are you doing about it? Are you teaching? Are you making a difference? And the questions weren't being asked by him to the Rebbe, but the Rebbe to him. And the Rebbe sent him back with a mission. And you see what's happening over here. Elkanah is the tourist, right? And he needs to find out where the local bathroom or Dunkin' Donuts is. And what's happening is saying, why are you not coming? Why aren't you joining me? And then they would start crying. We really should. We know we should. We should go with you. And slowly but surely, even up to 60 houses would descend with him. And he'd pick different routes each year. He'd go through different villages. And Elkanah, via his simple aliyah l'regel, was the person who was able to make known once again the fact that there is a l'sheikh nasir shud. You see what's happening over here? It's almost like the story at the end of Shoftim and the beginning of Shmuel is a reverse telling of those psukim in Dvarim. The psukim in Dvarim says l'sheikh nasir shud v'asher shama, seek out. Make known that you're going to find the house of God in Shiloh. Don't do Ish Hayasha ben Avyaseh. What's happening that we're seeing in reality was Elkanah is the reversal. He's the person who has to seek out the house of God because society is doing Ish Hayasha ben Avyaseh, which leads to the anarchy of what we had beforehand. That's the story she's being told to us. That's why it's the Ish Echad, because he is the antidote to those people, to all those individuals, or the one people who made a terrible, who created a terrible calamity in Israel. If we go one step further than this, you see something very, very beautiful, and that is as the Radak points out in Source 21, you see this is all to be included in the actual Radak himself. He says in Source 21, Mehar Ephraim, from the house of Ephraim, Levi Hoya, Vayagar Beretz Ephraim. He was a Levite, and he lived in the land of Ephraim. Ve'efshar kilatam zeh nismach ma'ase pilegesh begiva l'sipur hazeh. Maybe this is why the two stories are adjacent. But Davar Elkama told us Shmuel, Shagam hu Levi hoya, he was also a Levi, who gagar beyakrasay Ephraim, umesibosoi ba'a ra gadolal Yisrael, misibose ba'a tova gadolal Yisrael. Because from the Pilegash Begiva Levi, terrible things came, from this Levi, great things came. Ushmuel b'noi hechser Yisrael l'derech tova. And it was Shmuel, his son, who was able to bring the B'nai Israel back. Meaning Shmuel was the turnkey. Why? Because he came from the Elkanah. He came from the person who was ultimately Elkanah. This also helps us understand a little bit of where Chana is coming from. We know a lot about Chana. We don't know so much about Elkanah, but we do know a bit about Elkanah from the way that this begins. Where this comes to its most interesting application is the way that Shmuel himself behaved. And if you just reverse to Source 19, Shmuel Aleph Perek Zayin, we're going to see in a few weeks, Metzah Hashem, V'holach midei shana b'shana v'sovav b'yisel v'agigol v'amitzpah v'shafalti s'israel eis kol ha'mekomo yisa elu. V'shuvosa amaras ha'kishan b'yisa. What happened was that Shmuel had a unique way of judging. He wasn't the address. Shmuel visited all addresses. Shmuel was the person who had his center of gravity in Ramah, which is where he grew up, but he circled outwards and outwards to all of Israel and returned to the Ramah. He went spiraling outwards to visit everybody because he came from the father who is able to walk among the Amcha, among the rest of the people, and speak to them, speak their language, reignite. The fact that they were crying is the emotions that they obviously felt, which they couldn't express because of the society. And therefore he begot a son who was able to walk back out there. One of the most successful Shoftim of all time, Shmuel Hanavi, who was able to turn it around. So when you want to understand the book, we need to just be able to understand the first three sentences to be able to understand the cataclysmic change which is occurring as we enter into Sefer Shoftim. Ishmael, I'd like to also just wish a very special mazel tov to Mrs. Ilse Warburg for first of all returning and the birth of a great-granddaughter, Metz Hashem. La Torah, Leben Torah, L'chupa, L'masim Tovim. Thank you very much, ladies. We'll continue next week. Dina.